post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
Welcome to The Near Post. My name's Eamon Flanagan and we're talking football across the Australian Community Radio Network. With me in the studio tonight, welcome to Aaron Walker. Aaron, how are you?
Not too bad, Eamon. How are you?
Good to have
you. Welcome back to the seat.
Thank you very much. And Paddy Bourdier, how are you, Paddy?
Hey, how are you going? Good.
Good. And Aaron, thanks for taking the seat and glad to have you with us again tonight.
Yeah, not a problem.
Okay, coming up in the first half of the first half hour, we're going to talk all the issues of the week. There's plenty of them. Of course, the A-League's just kicked off. The Socceroos are playing away in Ireland. And, of course, the Fighting Matildas didn't let us down on the field in China. We've got all the turmoil, opinions, facts, rumours, quiz, dedications and more. And you can catch us, as ever, on the blog. And www.nearpost.blogspot.com is where you'll find the podcast. And the show dedication this week is, we've got a couple of dedications. Always like to dedicate the show. I'm going to dedicate it this week to the Gold Coast United for setting a new standard in Australian football. And also, particularly with their second goal, we'll talk more about that in a moment. And also to Kofi Dunning. Fantastic to see young boys, young players coming through, and Kofi took the game by storm on the weekend. Okay, we've got a quiz question for our football geniuses, or genius, across the desk. Name a marquee who has scored on debut.
Who's top of the A-League and who's coming last? The near post, get there fast.
Okay, so Aaron, I'm going to start with you. Name a marquee who scored on debut on the weekend.
Fowler got one.
Robbie Fowler.
I reckon Kalina got one, didn't he?
Jason Kalina got one, and one other marquee scored. Not probably on debut, but certainly in the A-League.
Oh, God, I really don't know.
No, God, you said him already.
Yeah, no. Was it Wellington? No.
Wellington, they don't have
a marquee, do they? No.
Aloisi put in a couple.
Well, he gets paid enough. I don't know the reason why, but he gets paid plenty.
Well, last year he was the highest paid sportsman in Australia.
$1.4 million, I hear, which works out as $700,000 per goal. Yeah.
That's right. And he's matched it already this season.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's good stuff. Okay, well, yeah, they're the three correct answers. Aloisi, Robbie Fowler, who is not God, by the way. Never was God, only to a small portion of Scousers in Liverpool, but the rest of the English population... Well, I don't think you'll find a Manchester United fan, Everton, Torquay or Newport County fan thinking that he was God. So let's just drop it.
Fair enough.
York City, don't I know you're a big York City fan.
They lost 2-1 on the weekend.
They lost 2-1, but they're back playing football. Okay, we've got some news. We'll just rip through the news. What have you got?
All right. Halftime Heroes is out. Australia's newest football fanzine. Get it from Near Post Blogspot, and it features some of Australia's more interesting football writers and cartoonists.
Adelaide's Bill Skinner has also got the Pissant fanzine out. It's done a great job, and in Melbourne, the independent fanzine continues on. I think they're up to about season 4 or whatever, so they're doing a great job. So football fans should check them out.
After a bit of toing and froing, Adam Griffiths is heading over to Saudi Arabia for a bit of a pay rise, $900,000 a year, up from his Gold Coast contract of $300,000, and rumoured to be a record transfer fee for Aussie football as well.
Kevin Muscat and Jamie Coyne are both out for a number of weeks. Muscat's out for about 4 or 5 weeks, they reckon. Jamie Coyne missing for Perth.
Yep, Amaral drops in for Perth, maybe even in Jamie Coyne's spot. He's expected to re-sign with the Glory.
And I heard he paid his own way, apparently. He was so keen to come back.
Is that right?
He mustn't have another club.
And Shane Stefanuto to start for the Fury this weekend. He's signed a 3-year deal, and this squad's starting to look a bit better.
Well, Shane Stefanuti has signed for them. I don't know whether that makes the squad much further, but yeah, we'll talk about it as well.
Well, they might not leak at the back so much.
No, that's true. They need every help they can get. Melbourne Victory head for membership record, despite perhaps a poor crowd of only 18,000 on the weekend. They've gone past their previous mark, last season's mark anyway, of 17,500 members, so things are looking good for them.
The V-bomber, Mark Viduka, is still clubless. Maybe there's a spot in him for somewhere in Australia. Maybe Perth Glory?
He could have nipped across to Ireland for a bit of training, couldn't he?
Yeah, he could have.
I mean, why not? And the young Matildas have crashed out of the Asian Cup. Not without a bit of fight, and, you know, Aussies always like to fight to the death. But more importantly, they're going to miss out on the World Cup, and that is a big, big loss. So when the dust has settled on the way they went out, and the fact that they were going to miss the World Cup, they drew with Japan and a disputed loss to China. Wasn't enough to take them through.
The next young Socceroos head to the semi-finals against Vietnam in the Asian Football Federation Under-19 Youth Championships. In Group A, they beat Cambodia 3-0.
And that's the wrap of all the news. There's plenty more going on, but we've got to talk some more football. So we're going to talk, first of all, the issues of the week. There's a couple of big issues floating around. I know, Paddy, Aaron, I think when I spoke to you today, Paddy, you mentioned the crowds were a big issue.
Yeah.
What's your concern with the crowds?
Look, it is a big issue because the crowds essentially are a good indicator of how well the A-League's going, and they are down. You know, they're down on expectations. They're down on other season starts. If we're starting to struggle with crowds under 10,000, then the A-League is really going to struggle in the future.
So we had a couple of crowds under 10,000. The Fury with their debut with Robbie Fowler playing Sydney FC, who are usually a bit of a draw card. Mm. They got 9,000. Of course, Newcastle Jets got 6,000. Now, Les Murray, just to throw one at you, Sir Les, as he's known around the traps.
Sir Les
said today that it was good for the crowds because it was up 12% on last year's opening day.
That's just because there's an extra fixture, Raymond.
Yeah.
No, he said percentage-wise.
Really?
Rather than, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I mean, obviously down in previous seasons, but certainly on last year's, they were 12% up. So
I've heard that stuff, but I thought, for me, this A-League season had a lot more talk around it, a lot more hype. I know the clubs went out in terms of marketing strategies really to push it, and I think what they got was quite disappointing. There is the argument that because the season started a bit earlier, it's overlapping with the other codes, and that might have had an impact.
Although that's the same every year, isn't it? I mean, the other codes are always being played.
Yeah, there is the overlap.
But we always do see a sharp increase in crowds immediately after the AFL and NRL finishes. And I can also tell you that the FFA saves a majority of their marketing budget and they roll that out as soon as the other codes finish. So a lot of the promotion gets done after the other codes roll up as well.
I mean, it's true. I mean, obviously you look at the Newcastle crowd, and I mean, the quality of the Newcastle team, I think, you know, why they're only getting 6,500. I mean, that says more about the way they've been running the club, doesn't it? They've been going for 5 years, they've had a championship, they've had a run in Asia, they've got some great players there.
Yeah, but maybe so. They've lost a coach that was there for some time. Maybe they're losing a few of their supporters.
I mean, well, the turnover of players at Newcastle doesn't help. I think they need to seriously look at how they're running the club from a community viewpoint, not just and obviously a lot of the players are leaving. Like, I saw Ante Kovac again complaining about how they were treated at the Jets. So, when you get to a grand final, that is a successful team and you've got something to build on. Clearly, they haven't built on it.
Yeah, the revolving door hasn't helped. I'm expecting to get a call up next week.
Well, you could well be. Mm. And they'll sell you as soon as you become a Socceroo, so you'll be away.
It's good. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Okay, so the crowds are an issue. North Queensland Fury. I mean, I think the big issue to me is still the free-to-air stuff. We're not on free-to-air, although, interestingly, the parochial teams, I suppose, or the smaller local teams like Central Coast, Newcastle and North Queensland Fury, although they're not on free-to-air, they get a lot of coverage in their local media, which the Sydney, Melbourne teams perhaps don't do so well. But it hasn't helped the crowd, seemingly. You know?
I saw James Matheson today quoted as saying that the North Queensland Fury need to hit a 12,000 average for the season just to break even in terms of their money deal with their stadium. And with 8,500 odd, I think they got with a blockbuster against Sydney in a historic fixture, I think he'd be quietly a little scared. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty disappointing. You add in the marquees, like people are going for big names, and you know that stuff costs money, and you need to get people through the gates for that. And if they're not coming through,
Not a big area. I was always wondered why they put in a team in Townsville. There's only 170,000 people up there. So,
I agree. Yeah. I did the maths earlier. That's 7% of the entire city that turned up. If you had 7% of the Sydney and Melbourne public turning up to watch those teams.
Now, a lot of people focus on the crowds, but I think there's a bigger issue out there, and I think it's the standard of football. I think the Gold Coast United have set a new bar for football, and I think it's a positive one. Mm. The second goal created by Smeltz, Joel Porter, the layoff to Chelina. And Chelina did something that we haven't really seen in the A-League. He just picked the ball up and he put it in the goal.
Yeah.
When a lot of the guys are sending it into row eight. I thought, what did you think? I think they've set a new level in terms of the way they played.
Yeah, it was fantastic, especially their play up front. Like, with Smeltz up front and Chelina, they've got some good players who can play the football, keep the football up there and move it about. And, yeah, that's fantastic to watch.
And we haven't always... I mean, we haven't seen that. I mean, the other thing about Chelina... One thing, a very simple thing he does that if you ever watch him play, he passes the ball out to the wing and then he sprints over to the guy he's just passed it to. It's a really simple tactic, but he just goes over to support the player. You very rarely see it from a central midfielder in the A-League. You know, they kind of give it out there, but they don't, even Matt McKay, you know, he doesn't bomb over. But it's just a really simple and effective thing, but a great way to support the player. But I think, what did you think, Aaron? How did you think Chelina played? I thought he really set
He really did take the game by the scruff of the neck, and I thought it wasn't only him, it was the Brazilian Robson sitting behind him that allowed him to get forward and get into those positions and create that play. I think those two, what Gold Coast have done very well is very traditional in soccer, strength straight through the middle. They've got Van Straten in goals. That Dutch guy that they had in centre back was did absolutely fantastic job. I'd never really heard of him, but he was really fantastic. Michael Thwaite, ex-Socceroo. Mm-hmm. Then they've got Robson and Kalina in the midfield, and then Smeltz and Porter up front. So yes, they've really put strength through the middle, and it really, really showed. They are setting a new bar in Australia.
I didn't think the Brisbane Roar did particularly badly, but I think the Gold Coast kind of played, you know, a more professional game than perhaps we've sometimes seen in the past, in that they sort of defended well, and then they broke over the 90 minutes when they could. I mean, the first goal was a great goal, wasn't it? It came completely against the run of play.
Well, it's the same old story for the Roar. They have all the play. They play nice football, and then in the top third, they just can't put the ball in the back of the net. I think if Brisbane had a Shane Smeltz, you'd be seeing a championship day.
Yeah, well, that's true. And I think and it's interesting that Miran Blyberg, who had a very exciting team at the Roar but couldn't score, has now got an exciting team at the Gold Coast, but it seems like he's got a bit more money. So he's been able to recruit well. And you do wonder how they're under the salary cap, all those guys. But
yeah, anyway, there's some issues there, isn't there?
There seems to be. Or maybe some of the clubs don't spend their salary cap. That's the other side of it.
Maybe most of the players are being paid a pittance and a couple of them being paid big wages. But, yeah.
OK, we're going to come back to the A-League in a minute. We're going to move on because there's a lot of football going on. The Socceroos are in Ireland, I'm delighted to say, playing in the Republic, playing in Limerick. My mum and dad won't be going, but I'm sure they'll be watching. Now, we've got a funny team out here. We've got players like Aaron Moy from Bolton, who's about 18, I think, and Oliver Bosnich from Cheltenham Town FC. Are they even a football team?
I know you've got issues with that. He's a good young player. He's a good young player.
He might be, but I mean, if he's up against Tim Cahill from Everton and Harry Kewell from Galatasaray, Cheltenham Town, I mean, are they... I mean, they're even worse than York City, aren't they, Aaron?
They're much, much worse than York City. The thing about Oliver Bosnich, is that how you pronounce it?
I don't know, Bosnich.
Anyway, he was turned down after trialling with the Central Coast Mariners, and then later went over and trialled immediately after that with Reading, who were in the Premier League at the time in 2007, having their best ever season, and he got a contract there. So turned down by Lauren McKenna and then taken on by a Premier League club, and he's still owned by Reading and on loan at Cheltenham Town.
He is on loan, in fairness to Lauren McKinnon, I guess at that time he was a young lad. He probably wasn't able to go straight into the first team. And at that time, there were no youth teams and they probably didn't have the money to... Laurie went for very experienced players, didn't he, in truth? But
maybe he's improved a lot.
Well, he should have done. But anyway, he's probably not going to play, is he?
No.
Look, I'd like to see him get some game time. I'd like to see a lot of those young guys
get some game time?
Because we need depth. The Socceroos suffer for depth. We need to build that depth in any way we can. Yes, you keep saying Cheltenham Town. Let's just assume that he's a really good young player going places, and Cheltenham Town is just a stepping stone for him.
I think you're right, but I think these things are done in cycles. He's not going to play in the next World Cup, so I don't see a lot of point in giving him experience until after that. After the World Cup, we'll have an X amount of players retire, then we start blooding the new gun and see how they go, and ready for 4 years after that.
How come we can bring Jade North from Korea, but we couldn't bring him back for the Asian Cup qualifier for a game that mattered, but we can fly him to the most western point, not even Dublin, he's on to Limerick, which is a bit further on as well?
I don't have an answer for this question.
You're here to have an answer.
Not in that particular one. That one doesn't make sense to me. Like, he's the only player that was picked outside of Europe for this. So my only speculation is that, you know, they wanted to just... They've got a particular, I guess, assignment or they want to make an assessment of his play or how he plays with a couple of other players.
Well, we've got no central defenders of any note, so therefore we have to bring him.
I reckon that's part of it.
Just quickly on Craig Moore, who's not in the squad, we're glad to say. With the near post say, Craig Moore should not go to the World Cup.
Me too. Get rid of him.
Get rid of him. So this is it. The campaign for Craig Moore.
Against Craig Moore going to the World Cup. It's a little harsh on Craig.
Shall we call it No More?
No More. That's it. No More. And I think, he's had his day, hasn't he? And I don't want him to embarrass the Australian shirt by kicking it out of Drogba or Ronaldo, whoever else may be there. And that's the only one.
You're right. We should get Kisnorbo right into that spot as soon as possible. That's what we should be doing.
That's the second campaign. Well, one called Paddy at the World Cup, all right? Well,
Craig Moore had a fantastic career. And when he retired over 06, he was still only 32. He'd had a fantastic career, captained a lot of time. I think that was a great time for him to drop out. Yeah. What I would have liked to see happen is some young kid come along and take that spot to be his own, that centre-back spot, so that even if Moore wanted to come back, he wouldn't have been had a spot to come back to.
That's right.
The only reason he's come back is because no one's taken that spot. North's had a go, Coyne's had a go, Kisnorbo's had a go. They've all had a go. No one's really taken that position to be their own, and that's why we're seeing
Moore. You could go argue they have, though, because we've qualified for the World Cup, and Moore didn't play in the last three games. So there has been Chris Coyne's popped in there. You know, Jay North had some decent games.
But I always had the feeling they were just patching over the cracks, so I don't think they ever had anybody sort of marked for the position that we're going to develop in that position. I think it was
Craig Moore at the World Cup.
We fluked it through.
You're not going to be happy with Craig Moore at the World
Cup? No, I'm going to nominate. Speed will be an issue.
I'm going to nominate an outsider here, and that's crazy Ljubo Milosevic. We know he has the talent. Yes. We know he has the experience.
If he
can keep his head together, I think he's the natural selection.
Look, he is one of my favourite players, if only for the amount of media that he generates. And
he is. He's a great player. I mean, I think he's.
Did you watch the Jets on the weekend? He was fantastic.
I think to me he's exciting for the A-Leaguers, Jason Chilena or Robbie Fowler. I mean, he's just beautiful to watch a playmaker coming out and the way he links the play.
I've never seen a centre back run from deep like that. The way he does and creates the play, and teams don't know how to deal with it. They're not used to it. That extra player coming from the back line, and it's very dangerous.
He can play the ball, Connie. He can link up. I mean, he really is. He's absolutely fantastic.
If we could take him by helicopter, put him straight in the stadium, straight onto the pitch, and he could play, and then after that, you take him out. Don't let him
talk to the other players.
Don't let him talk to anyone, his teammates. See, to put him in a squad situation, certainly in the World Cup, where you're together for months and months, you can't have a hand grenade, you know, sitting around like that ready
ticking
to go
time
off.
Bomb, you think?
Ticking time bomb. I really, really do think so.
Poor Ljubo.
I know. He's such a good player, and he's so good to listen to.
The Near Post going to campaign for Ljubo to get the World Cup, because we just need more entertainment talent to talk
no
about.
No more, and bring on Ljubo.
Bring on Ljubo. Okay, just a note on Jason Chilena, you know, Socceroo through and through. Why hasn't he gone to Ireland to play?
He wasn't fit. They've just come through their pre-season. He hasn't been playing. When they pulled the squad together, international football is different to A-League football.
Oh, come on, David Carney. Who's he been playing for? Sheffield United. They haven't started, have they?
Yeah, he won't get a game either. He's hopeless. I hear he's off to Anderlecht, by the way. I hear.
Oh, really?
Adrian Madowski in, Paddy Kisnorbo, but none of these guys have been playing. Chilean has actually got one game under his belt.
Well, you're mentioning all the centre-backs because we are desperate for a centre-back, and that just shows the measures that we're going to.
Lucas Neal can't be game fit.
He doesn't have a club.
You know, so I don't think that argument holds. But, I mean, I do wonder about Pim's selection policy, when and where he's going and who he's going to call up for whichever soccer is game. You know, he doesn't seem to know.
I think this one's a one-off. This isn't part of what Pim sees as the beginning of World Cup preparation. This
is the cup game. That was a one-off as well. You brought in a whole bunch of.
That's right. Yes, the never to be mentioned again Asian Cup game.
In camera. Okay, we're going to talk the A League. Melbourne Victory 0, Central Coast Mariners 2, Adelaide 1, Perth Glory 0, North Queensland 2, Sydney FC 3, Brisbane Roar 1, Gold Coast United 3, Newcastle Jets. Over the Wellington Phoenix 3-2. Aaron, start with yourself. Which particular game? We've discussed the Gold Coast a little bit, but which other game or player, or what were your sort of thoughts on the weekend?
The Fury surprised me. I think they've got a squad which is a lot better than a lot of people think. They've still got a couple of key players to come back, Ufuk Tale and Wilson as well, who's had a very successful career over in Scotland. Now they've got Stefanuto as well. I think their squad's a bit better than people think. They've got tough conditions up there. A squad in the Laurie McKenna ilk, who makes his players run very hard and makes them very hard to break down and beat. You really have to earn a victory against them. And I don't think they're going to do as poorly as some people think they will.
I think as the season starts going and they play more and more games up north in the heat, I think they'll get a few results come their way. They've picked a team that's very fit, that's going to do well in that heat. I think they'll start to come.
They showed a lot of character to come back from 2-0 down as well. They could have easily just crumbled and gone down to 5, but they fought back and they could have snatched the game very easily.
And I want to echo every other football commentator in Australia and say, Robbie Fowler, he's not as fat as I thought he would be.
That's a little bit different to echoing every football commentator. Most of them said he did really well, but he's not as fat as we thought. I agree with you there, Paddy. But was he any good?
No.
He wasn't. I mean,
he scored a goal and that took the pressure off him. But if he didn't score that penalty, everyone would have been on his back saying he played
really
poorly.
Did you think he was going to be great?
No, he was never great. Once he left Liverpool the first time, which is about 24 years ago.
He hasn't been a great player, an influential player in a team for a long, long time.
Players like Fowler and Michael Owen, who burst onto the scene because they're super, super quick, as soon as that pace goes, which it does by 25, they find themselves...
Well, Fowler wasn't ever super, super quick, was he?
Yes, he was. Have a look at him when he was 18, 19, 20 years old, when he was really scoring goals
for
Liverpool, and
meters,
he was super quick.
He had some acceleration.
He was never as fast as Michael Owen.
No, well, not many of us were.
No, but he was a great goal scorer, and that was all he was really renowned for, wasn't he? It wasn't his link play or...
No, it was, just getting into that space and having that shot and putting it in the back of the net. He isn't able to find that space now.
Bring up his wiki page. I think he's played about 5 games in the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's right. Now, Dwight York, obviously similar player that came, but I mean, Dwight had much more ability to adapt to influence the game in the early. I don't think we're going to see that out of Robbie Ollie.
No, I don't think so. Dwight York, even for his national team, Trinidad dropped back into midfield, played him more of a midfield role. I don't see Fowler being able to move anywhere than where he is.
No, I don't either. So I think, Robbie, that's it. We've written you off. That's okay. What about Sydney FC? Does it say more about the fact that Sydney FC were, they're actually not very good? The fact that the Towns or Nils Quinton Fury were able to come back at them? Because, I mean, they should have had that game wrapped up.
I don't know. I thought they did all right. You know, they've usually play horrendously anyway. So for them to win a game, Aloisi to score, it's all right. They've had the longest preseason in history. You know? It started in 2007.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm expecting Sydney to come together a bit more this season.
The interesting thing about Sydney for me is they have Mitchell Prentice, Mark Bridge, Dewey Masalak, and a whole heap of others either on the bench or not. You know, it shows a bit of depth finally for the team, doesn't it, or for the squad. You know, they've got Adam Casey to come through. Kofi Downing obviously started. Ryan Grant, another young boy. So I think they've got a bit more depth this year. So it'll be interesting to see how they go. Melbourne Victory, come on.
Yeah.
Get stuck into it. Champions. Aaron, what were your thoughts?
They can't cross. They lost because they can't cross. Laurie McKenna clogged up the centre. They put 3 players immediately in front of his back four, let them have the ball out wide, knowing that between Berger and Kemp, they just cannot put the ball in that middle area. I think Berger put about 50 crosses either out or 20 metres over everything. He does the hard stuff. He's very good at getting past his man, getting down the line. And then he goes to put in across the easy thing, which even I could do, get it in that area. Yeah. I mean, there's a 10 by 10 metre radius he's got to get it into, and he just can't do it.
You'd think his training consisted of him just running down the wing, crossing it into the box.
No, he just can't do it. And that's why it cost him. That's why
he could do that all the time. The long pre-season, and you think, well, he's got all those months of pre-season.
Why isn't he built as part of his game?
But you see, the thing was, he didn't even get it right once, did he? It wasn't one cross.
And towards the end of the game, you saw Archie Thompson cottoned onto drifting out wide because that's where all the space was to get the ball. That didn't help anything. That just meant that Allsop was the one person surrounded by 7 yellow shirts looking to receive any cross, which never came anyway.
No, it's disappointing. It's any team that starts off with Broxham and the other fellow, Grant Brebner, you're just not looking for excitement there, are you? I mean, you're relying on Hernandez to perform, and he does sometimes, but he didn't. And of course, let's face it, if you've seen the same Melbourne team for 5 years and the same strategy, any coach should be able to block it. And McKenna proved right.
I agree, because, all the talk in pre-season was that they were a settled team, that they hadn't gone through the changes like the other team. But I think they're probably suffering from that. Their football's a bit predictable, and people are starting to work out how to play them.
Okay, the games this weekend, where hopefully the crowds will pour through the gates. You're not convinced, Paddy, but there you go. Central Coast versus Newcastle, Gold Coast versus North Queensland in another Queensland derby. It'd be interesting to see what crowd
that'd be great.
The Gold Coast get. Melbourne versus Brisbane should be a bit of a... Yeah, that should be an interesting game. Wellington Perth, that'll be boring. And Sydney FC versus Adelaide. Although Wellington...
Let me correct you. I think it's Sydney FC versus Wimbledon, isn't it?
Oh, versus Wimbledon, of course. Yeah, a bit of banter between Dave Mitchell and... the other fella.
That's just Dave Mitchell throwing his toys out of the cot because he was beaten. You can't claim that you deserve the win because your football was better.
Now the other issue of the week, just to wrap up, before we wrap up, Aussie sports stars. Is it true that Australians can't take losing? The cricket team will get a bad press where they lose. They have a bit of a tantrum. Lucas Neal and his merry men had a bit of a tantrum in the Asian Cup. Mm. And now we see the young Matildas not taking on the likes of Noumea and New Caledonia. Mm. They've actually gone in hard on China. Not a wise move. What do you think?
Here's your mistake. You're connecting the tantrum with winning or losing. I think you'll find the tantrum regardless of the win or the loss.
Okay, well, we'll go a step further. Can we have the tantrum? I mean, the young Matildas charging in, is it a good look? What do you think?
I saw some of the footage, and one of the Matildas was knocked over,
yep.
and players were going in to defend her. And I think that, you know, Football Australia have to go with the line that it was unacceptable. But, you know, there's a point where your teammates get knocked over and pushed around. You have to step up. Right?
No, you don't, Paddy. What you do? What do you do then? Well, when your teammate gets knocked over yeah. by someone from China, you just go, "Oh, that's wrong," and say, "Ref, go and sort it." You don't need, because if you, what happens if you tend to run in and go with your fist flying, what happens is you have a big all-in brawl and all your mates are in, and before you know it, you're sending a message around the country to all the girls and everybody else and saying, "Well, is that the Matildas fighting on the telly?" It's a shocker.
They don't do it all the time, just a little bit.
The biggest issue out of all of this is the way that it reflects on our World Cup bid, our 2018-2022 World Cup bid.
I don't agree. The World Cup bid, that's true, but I think it's the issue that, you know, once again, we're seeing violence on the sports field, and we see it across our junior codes all the time in all the codes, and if that's acceptable at the elite level, they got some wrong decisions, they got some, you know, they had some referee penalty decisions, etc., etc. But, you know, if that's acceptable, it's just not on. It's a national team. I mean, what sort of message can you give to your kids when they're out on the field on the weekend? You get a bad decision, just get in there. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
Well, these are kids, though. I mean, there was 15, 16-year-old girls in the team. I mean, they are still developing. This is something they'll learn over the next few years as part of being professionals.
Well, you still got to set a standard, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure they'll be rectified for what they've done.
Yeah, okay. I can't remember the Matildas being in anything like that.
Your Matildas, not the Matildas, no.
But
you know, what happens at your local comp, you know, when the guys... Well, it happens, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and this is a national team, so it's bound to happen at the local, you know, sort of summer soccer festival or whatever, and it's an all-in brawl. Go for it. Anyway.
I don't know. I've been playing soccer for about 25 years. I've never seen an all-in brawl. Not in Australia.
Have you not?
No.
Yeah, but lived.
I've seen scuffles and things like that.
Were you playing this weekend? I'm coming in and starting all
in. Okay, we've been too hard on the young Matildas. Go, no, young
I think
Matildas.
We are. Look,
all right, well, I am anyway, yeah. yeah. Okay, all right, we'll let them off. And they're not going to go to the World Cup, so that's a bit disappointing. All right, so the final, any final words on the weekend, or what are you looking forward to, Paddy, very quickly?
Oh, I loved it. I'm looking forward to the Queensland Derby.
Newcastle Jets player Vignarelli, the Italian guy, is that how you pronounce it? Is a fantastic player. His touch and control and delivery of the ball is far above anything I've seen.
The ex-Lazio player?
Yep.
How old is he now?
About 33, I don't know. But his delivery of the ball, especially from set pieces, is fantastic. And if Evan Berger could get it half as good as he did, victory would have won him all the
weekend. That's a great note to leave on. A bit of advice for Evan. Thank you, Aaron, for coming in. And thank you, Paddy. And we'll be back, no doubt, some of us, all of us, or next week for more talk, more football. It never stops. We'll, no doubt, analyse the soccer and the young Matildas and anybody else who comes our way. And if you're going to the near post, wherever you are,
get there first.
I'm Sally Shippard from the Matildas. If you're going to the near post, get there first.
Near post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst. The near post, get there first.